Okay, continuing with greater discourse of the four establishments of life. Still on the body, we've talked about breath, postures, bodily activities, and the parts of the body. And we get the body's given as the parts of the body. The next practice is given is the four elements. The Pali word for element is Dhatu. Elements, sort of okay translation. I actually prefer characteristics or aspects. I'll read you what it says. Again, one reviews this body, however it may be placed or disposed, in terms of the elements. There are in this body the earth element, the water element, the fire element, the air element. So these are the classic four elements of Greek literature, etc. Don't take it literally. Right? Think of them as symbols. The earth element at the time of the Buddha was solidity and extension. The fact that when I hold the striker out and it doesn't droop down is because it's got enough earth element in it, right? If this were a piece of licorice, you know, it probably just sort of droop down, doesn't have as much earth element. Water is liquidity and cohesion in the sense that if you have flour and add water, it sticks together. You have dough, you have dust, you have water, you got mud. Air is gas and movement, fire is hot and cold. That's the classic interpretation. But since I have a background in physics, I'm much more interested in just doing earth is solid, water is liquid, air is gas, and fire is energy. And since this is all symbolic anyhow, what's most important is to find the symbols that you can relate to. We have a simile that gives us a hint of how to work with it. Just as if a skilled butcher or his apprentice, having slaughtered a cow, were to sit at a crossroad with the carcass divided into portions, so too one reviews this very body in terms of the elements. There are in this body earth element, water element, fire element, air element. Okay, so the first thing about the simile, there were no sacred cows in India at the time of the Buddha. Had there been, you wouldn't be able to sit at crossroads with a cow carcass. You do that today in India, it will go very, very badly for you. Right? But basically, if you go into a butcher shop, what you see is sirloin, T-bone, hamburger, rump roast, right? You don't see cow. You just see the constituent parts. So the practice is, can you experience the world in terms of solids, liquid, gases, and energy, rather than trees and rocks and walnuts and squirrels and all the other stuff? Can you take your conceptualizing, your normal way of conceptualizing the world, and back off from doing that and conceptualize it differently? One of the most important teachings from the Buddha, I had to actually summarize basically what he's saying as practice, is don't be fooled by your concepts. We go around conceptualizing the world in all sorts of ways. And we think whatever concept I come up with is obviously accurate. Why would I come up with the wrong concept? Well, turns out sometimes we do. Turns out all the time we do. Things are a lot more complicated than we think they are. And so the Buddha is teaching us not to be fooled by our concepts. So this practice of the four elements, the four characteristics or four aspects, is one of breaking out of your normal conceptualizing of the world by doing a different kind of conceptualizing. baby steps at first, right? So I'm going to do a guided contemplation, which will give you a better sense of how to work with these. But any questions about the four elements before we start the guided contemplation? Okay. So, in order to begin, just keep your attention on your breath. Drop the attention on your breathing and look at your body and see if you can find examples of earth element. The easiest way to start would be to push your tongue against your teeth and feel the solidity of your teeth. Also notice your fingers. You can probably sense the bones in your fingers pressing against whatever they're touching. Just start scanning through your body looking for earth element, the solid bit. Your attention in your sits bone. They're solid. They're earth element. And also notice that upon which you're sitting. It's not rock solid, but it's certainly not liquid or gas. Notice your feet. Feel the bones in your feet, and then you can notice what your feet are touching. Earth element. Now imagine that you stand up and start walking towards the door. And feel the solidity of the bones in your legs and feet, as well as the solidity of the floor. You get your shoes, and you strap some earth element onto your feet, and then you grab the doorknob, and you can feel its solid nature. And you open the door, noticing earth element in the door. Step outside. The porch out there is earth element, the steps are earth element, and then you can step onto the earth. Feel earth element. Look at a tree. It's standing upright because it has earth element, solidity. Notice the buildings. They, too. you have earth element. That's how they're standing up. You see a squirrel? You know, his bones are very much like yours. We all have earth element within us. Bird flies by, his bones may be hollow, but they're also rigid. They too have earth element. You pick up a rock, feel how solid it is. Lots of earth element there. Walk around just noticing examples of earth element everywhere you look. Dirt, the trees, the plants, the animals, the building, the car. Put your attention back on yourself. Sitting in this room, now scan your body looking for water element, liquidity. Easiest is going to be to notice the saliva in your mouth. Possibly could notice some liquidity around your eyes. If you're quiet enough, you might notice your heartbeat, blood moving through your body. That's water element. Remember your high school biology, you know that you are almost three-quarters water, just like the surface of the planet. If you stand up and go outside, all that green is due to water element. Go up to a tree, you can feel its solid nature, but you might notice some sap. That sap is just like your blood, carrying nutrients from one place to another. There are puddles left over from the rain. That's water element for sure. Any animals that you see? Yeah. Squirrels and birds also are mostly water element. You look up into the sky, you see the clouds. Well, they're not liquid yet, but water falls out of the sky. How amazing is that? If water didn't fall out of the sky, this would be a very different planet. If you really stop to think about it, the planet is misnamed. It would be the planet Water, because that's what makes it so unique. Your attention back on yourself sitting in this room. and see if you can notice the air element. The easiest, of course, is to put your attention on your breathing. You can feel the coolness of the air coming into your nose, the warmth as it goes back out. Sometimes you notice other gases within your body. If you stand up and start walking towards the door and pay careful attention, you can feel yourself pushing the air out of the way as you walk. Step outside, and if there's a breeze, you can feel the air pushing against you. If it's a bit windy, you can go up to a tree, wrap your arms around it, and feel the tree moving back and forth in the wind. You can see the leaves twitching in the wind. There's air all around it. See some animal breathing, just like you do. Bird flies by, supported by the air. And there's actually 14.5 pounds of air pressure per square inch on your body. That were to disappear, it would be most unpleasant. We live at the bottom of an ocean of air. Again, become aware of yourself sitting in the room. And see if you can notice the fire element in your body. Probably the easiest is to put your attention on your hands. Notice difference in temperature between where the hands are touching something and where they're exposed to the air. The other parts of your body where you can notice a difference as well. You actually have quite a lot of fire within you. Your temperature is 98.6 Fahrenheit. It's actually rather warm. Stand up and go outside. There's a difference in the air temperature that was in the house and what's outside the house. More fire element when it's hotter. If the sun comes out, you can feel fire element coming at you from 93 million miles away. You go up to that tree, you put your hand on it, it's got a temperature, not ice cold, it's got fire element within it. You put your hand in a puddle, yeah, it feels cool, but not ice cold, not frozen solid. solid, there's fire in that water. You see the clouds moving. You're being blown by the wind. The wind is moving because of the fire element heating up parts of the planet. Causing the air to move, producing the wind, moves the cloud. If you go for a really brisk walk on a hot day, you notice all of the elements. There's the solidity of your legs and feet meeting the solidity of the earth. And then you start wanting more air as you're breathing harder. Then you start to sweat as your body puts out water element to evaporate to cool you off. Because you've got too much fire element inside. Are the four aspects of the material world inside of us and all around us. So again, you do this internally and externally, and both internally and externally. In other words, you notice these elements within you, and you notice them in the world around you. The quality of being solid in your bones is the same as the quality of being solid in the tree, or the building, or the dirt. And the quality of liquid in your saliva is the same quality as in the puddle, etc. The purpose of the practice is actually to give you a different view of the world, seeing that there's a lot of commonality. It's not really apparent. Just these four aspects of the material world, solid, liquid, gases, and energy. This is a good practice to do when you're doing walking meditation. You get your path, it's 25, 30 paces long. And then as you walk back and forth, you pick one element. And you're just noticing earth in your body, in the ground, tree standing upright, whatever. And you're just noticing earth element, either tactily or visually. As you're walking along. And when you get bored with the earth, then you switch to another element. You just do your walking meditation, noticing one element at a time. You can do the same thing when going for a walk. You go for a walk and just look for earth element or water element or any of it. Or when going for a walk, everything you encounter, you can break it into its constituent parts of solid, liquids, gases, and energy. Any questions about this practice or about the elements? Do a body scan and you get tingling.
Tingling, yeah. What element is it?
The T tingling. The tingling is a mental thing, right? And it's in the solid part, but the fact that you would refer to it as tingling means that it's actually the sixth element, consciousness. Right? So all the mental stuff would be sixth element. So there's solidity in the skin or wherever where the tingling is. And then there's you recognizing the changing nature of that. And then you call it tingling. And when you're calling it tingling, that's a mental activity. So that would be the sixth element. The fifth element is space. The fifth and sixth are immaterial. Space, I mean, this room works because of the space element. So now you see elements not really like we think of the 92 naturally occurring elements. It's more the aspect. This room works because it has the characteristic of having a lot of this room not be there, right? And the bottle works to hold the water because it's got space in it. And then all of the mental stuff, your thoughts, your emotions, all of this is the sixth element. The space is full of air. The space is two-thirds full of water. But because the space is immaterial, it's not a real thing. Okay? It's not real space in the room. It's that we have conceptualized the solidity of the house as encompassing a thing we call a room, and there's lots of space in this room, which is full of air, and also has people in it, and mats, and a lamp, and a Buddha, and, right? So within the space, there are things, but all of this is conceptual. So when we say the room has space, it's a concept, it's not a real thing. And if you're down at sea level, all the space is going to be filled with air, unless, of course, you somehow manage to get the air out. You have a balloon, and all the air comes out of it, you've got it all scrunched down, there's no space and no air left. You tie the balloon up and you put it in a vacuum chamber and remove all the air. Well, the balloon will inflate slightly because you didn't get quite all the air out of it. There was a little bit left yet. So it's all about our concepts. And so we conceptualize space. If we were to turn on the fans and blow all the air out of here, the new air would come in, right? But the space would remain the same because it's not material. It's just a concept that we're laying on top of the solidity that makes up the house. The other elements are also concepts, but they're material. They're concepts about materiality. So it's a little more difficult to see that they're just conceptual. Does that help?
I apologize in advance if this is a rude question. I'm very interested in what you're saying, but when you start to do the body scan, or the scan and yesterday's scan, I immediately start to fall asleep.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I want to hear it. I'm interested in what's going on. It's like, and then I have this battle.
Right.
Do some people, is there an aversion to something I don't know about, or?
Most common reason people fall asleep when a guide the body scan is a version to the body scan. And it's really common. You know, I'm up here guiding it. I got my eyes closed most of the time. But I do check out the room to see, you know, how many people are falling asleep and so forth. Because, yeah, there are people falling asleep every time I do it. It's not a rude question. And generally, when I talk to the person about it, there's aversion. I don't remember if you raised your hand when I said who didn't like the body scan, but
I did.
Yeah. Most people who fall asleep don't like the body scan. Now, why don't you like the body scan? Is it only because it makes you fall asleep? Well, okay. But there's usually something about, something about this they don't like. And it's something we could explore in your interview if you want to. But, it's not uncommon at all.
Yesterday during the body scan, I was battling it also, but during the body scan yesterday, I was having this battle with myself also to keep awake, not to embarrass myself in front of everybody. But I think the room was a little bit hot and maybe windows being closed due to the air conditions, maybe there was not enough fresh air.
Yeah, it could be that that's part of it, is that, just not enough fresh air. There's also my rather boring voice. There's me telling you what to do, and people don't like to be told what to do. So that can produce some of the aversion. And instead of doing what you're told to do, you just go to sleep. So yeah, there's a lot of possibilities of what goes into it.
For me, I actually like doing the body scan, but I feel sleepy anyhow. But I think that's because I'm normally tensed up, so when I scan the body, it relaxes me.
So the relaxing makes you sleepy. Oh, interesting. Yeah, that could be part of it as well.
I'm curious as to why you required us to do it once a day. You were quite insistent, and you said, make sure you do it every day.
It's a useful practice in a number of ways, in that it's a training to help you get in touch with more and more subtle objects as you get more and more skilled with it. So that's one. Two, it could bring you insights into not self and anicca. Three, if you don't like doing it, then it's probably good that you do it, because you might gain some insight into why you don't like doing it, right? And I have to be insistent about it, because the people who benefit the most from doing it are those who don't want to do it. So I have to be very insistent. If I say, well, you know, this would be really good for you, you should do it. The people who don't want to do it won't do it. So I have to be really insistent and say, everybody has to do it. That way, those who would benefit the most actually do it. So,
good way to look for ticks.
True, it's a very good way to look for ticks.
Body scanning, then I would just like to give a different view. My experience is the best thing. And I remember I read some statistics, I think it was in Europe, it's the most liked or preferred way of. I practiced it a lot, and it started with the Goenka retreats, where you just do body scan and kind of constant, and then you really start to feel what's happening in the body, this tingling sensations, and you almost start to feel the flow of blood and all the sensations, and then gradually you start to lose all these kind of elements, as you mentioned, it goes into more like nobody, nothing, you're just aware of these sensations, and it can be amazing experience, really amazing. By itself, you get so many insights. If you get into the groove of this, like really feeling the body, these sensations. And I also practice yoga nidra, which is kind of a different, and you do the body scan, but with a different emphasis, maybe relaxing or maybe something else. So I think what happens with more practice, they say you establish connections with different parts of time these kind of connections or neural pathways, they are refreshed and you feel really energized and really kind of great. My experience is very positive.
Yeah. So there are a host of reasons to do the body scan. And I have to insist because there's resistance to that. It's a lot of work. You know, you just want to sit there and space out. No, I'm not going to allow you to do that. You're going to have to work.
How important, or is it important to label the sensations?
No,
the body
you shouldn't
okay.
label. You
so
should
just
notice.
Note that there's a sensation.
Notice there's a sensation.
Okay.
That's all. But yeah, the labeling actually is counterproductive
okay.
at that point.
Yeah, good.
I think my understanding of the Wingo technique is that everything that we experience gets stored in the body.
Yeah, that's basically what gets taught. It's all stored here, and then by scanning it, hopefully you release the negative stuff.
And as long as you don't react to it. So
right.
You don't want to go Wingo retreat. First time you do the techniques, some people get feel sick, some people, there's just all different emotional reactions.
Right, that's why I ask, did anyone feel nauseated? Yeah.
In relation to the body scan and feeling nauseated, with the jazz, is a reaction ever to feel nauseated when you're practicing the jazz? Is that a reaction you've heard of?
I've heard of it, but it's quite rare. It's common when you're doing the body scan. With the jhanas, it's more about the level of concentration, I think, and getting that deeply concentrated sometimes brings up the unresolved stuff that I mentioned. And it may not even show up in a way that you can identify what it is or anything else. It's just the level of concentration. Normally, we're spending a lot of energy to keep that stuff down. And you get that concentrated, there's no energy to keep it down, it bubbles up, and that can cause some nausea.
And then, do you recommend a walking meditation or breathing, or to go into maybe the body scan at that point?
I would say that if you start feeling nauseous while doing the jhanas, I would say switch to doing insight practice at that point. And you could even ask, all right, what's this about? We'll just be quiet and see if anything bubbles up. Usually nothing, sometimes nonsense, and sometimes something useful. But probably best at that point to just go switch to doing insight practice. In other words, you've taken it probably as far as going to be useful, and so switch to doing an insight practice.
And if the reaction is after?
The reaction is after, again, you're going to ask what it is, and probably something a bit more active will help with the nausea, such as doing walking meditation or going for a walk.
We're doing the body scan and we realize that we're quite undistracted and we're really with it. How long should we do that for before looking for the pleasant sensation?
When you're doing the body scan, you should finish it. Even though you feel like you're not getting distracted, even though you may have encountered a pleasant sensation, go ahead and finish the body scan. It's kind of hard to tell how concentrated you are when you're doing the body scan. But if you do the whole thing and it takes 30 to 40 minutes, then yeah, you're going to be pretty concentrated and you're going to have a much better chance at that point with staying with the subtlety of the pleasant sensation. Whereas cutting it short, yeah, you might have overestimated how concentrated you were. So just as a general rule, finish it. If the bell rings while you're doing a body scan and you haven't finished, let's say you've just gotten down to your weight, you should quickly finish it, like in 10 seconds. Just do it quickly. It seems to make it a nicer feeling of having done it. But, if you're doing it in the afternoon, like I say, it should probably take longer than a half hour if you're doing it right.
Two questions. On the four elements, what would be a sign that it's working? Is that a useful question? And then the second one is more curiosity. How long did it take you to tell the difference between the toes?
remember exactly how long it took to feel the individual toes. At first, yeah, there was a big toe and there was a blob. But within a year, I was getting all the toes individually. I think the toes came fairly quickly. I think the toes came quicker than getting consistent in the arm between the shoulder and the elbow, between the elbow and the wrist. The joints, very easy. Toes are joints, and so I think they came faster than the large areas of the extremities. But yeah, I don't remember. How is the four element, how do you know the four element practice is working? Because you start to get a sense of, oh yeah, there's a lot of commonality here. Basically, you start seeing that, you start seeing the world in terms of solid, liquids, gases, and energy, and the world includes your own body, your own materiality, as well as that around you. And there's a lot of commonality. I mean, the tree and the house have a lot in common, besides the fact that they're wood. There's some solidity there. And the solidity in your arm is, yeah, that's in common as well.
So for those of us with slight body scan aversion, is it okay to start with bigger areas than the coin size? And just look for sensation there, or does it have to be?
I think it's better to go with the, you know, half dollar size.
Dollar bill?
So half dollar is
silver
about
dollar.
Half dollar is about as big. Yeah, because what you are trying to do is train yourself to notice subtle sensations. So anything you do to make it easier doesn't train you in difficult stuff. So, yeah, sorry.
The other observation, when I first did the Goenka retreat, and then last night, I had some pretty lucid, wild dreams. And
yeah.
They actually resolved some issues once I figured out that's the crazy part.
Yeah, people frequently report very wild and crazy dreams on retreat. Quite common. And when I'm teaching retreat, I have just as crazy a dreams as when I'm on retreat, even if I'm not getting in the same kind of meditation.
I know this was said already, but I forgot it a little bit. How long do you stay in African meditation for?
Once you've got access concentration established, I say 5 to 10 to 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
All right? The longer you stay, the deeper the jhanas will be after that. But there is a point of diminishing returns where, yeah, your body's just getting tired. So if it took you, let's say, half an hour to get to access concentration, then, yeah, stay there 5 or 10 minutes. If you got to access concentration, say, in 5 or 10 minutes, then you might want to stay there longer and let the concentration build. If it took you an hour to get to access concentration, then yeah, probably move on pretty quick within 5 minutes or so. So it really depends on the quality of the access concentration, how long you stay there. With the additional things, if you stay too long, then your body gets tired and doesn't work. But if you stay a long time, you will have higher quality jhana. So it's kind of nebulous. So let's say 5 to 15 minutes. You're fully with the object of meditation, such as the breathing. And if there are thoughts, they're not pulling you into distraction. They're in whispering in the background. Okay, so you're fully with your object. And for the breath, you know each in breath, you know each out breath. Doing metta, and you're using the phrases, then you're right there with each of the phrases. If you're doing a visualization, then you're giving out the flowers and you're seeing the people you're giving the flowers to. And for the body scan, basically do the body scan, nice 35-40 minutes, And then if there's a pleasant sensation, go for the pleasant sensation. Otherwise, go to the breath. The breath is almost. Yeah, that's hard. Yeah, I mean, you've worked so hard to get the breath so that you don't lose the breath, and now when I can do that, I tell you, lose the breath. To the best of your ability, focus entirely on the pleasant sensation and leave the breath as far in the background as possible. Ideally, you don't notice it at all. Practically, it's going to be there. You want to give it as little attention as you possibly can.
I can get active concentration pretty regularly. And when I switch my attention to a pleasant sensation, I find I'm having a hard time connecting with paying attention to the pleasantness of the pleasant sensation. It's really easy to notice the location,
yeah,
the size, the texture. But when I do that,
right. Yeah. So instead of paying attention to the pleasantness, enjoy the pleasantness. Maybe that'll help a bit. But yeah, this is tricky, because it's a lot easier to notice the location and the intensity and everything else. But what you really want is to just, you want to set up the positive feedback loop of pleasure, and that's going to come with just being the experience of pleasure. And so as best you can, don't analyze, that is, see how big it is, see where it is, etc. Just enjoy. As far as I can tell, now I'm a computer programmer, not a neuroscientist. The PT is dopamine breaking down into norepinephrine. And the dopamine is the neurotransmitter that gives you pleasure. The norepinephrine is what gives you the vibration and the heat. Right, so what you want to do is focus on the aspect of the pleasantness that's going to give you pleasure. That'll up the dopamine content, so you've got enough to break down into norepinephrine to give you the PT, and then the whole experience will bring the sukha, the opioids, probably serotonin. So if you're looking at the location, well, it's just the location. There's not much pleasant about that. The size is just the size. There's not much pleasant about that. But the pleasantness, that's the essence of what's pleasant. So that's why you want to focus on it. But yeah, it's tricky. It's hard to work with.
Are there any tricks about working with time? I seem to lose the concept of time totally.
Good. If you're well
concentrated, 20 minutes.
Yeah, if you're well concentrated, then time begins to disappear. You don't have no idea how long it is. That's why, part of why I say 5 to 10 to 15 minutes. You know, if I told you 7.5 minutes in access concentration, it's ridiculous. Your sense of time is completely gone. But if I say 5 to 15 minutes, then okay, I got to be here for a while. And so you hang out. Has this been long enough? Well, I guess. Try it and see. And if it doesn't work, well, maybe next time I'll stay longer. So yeah, the clock time. Yeah.
It's more like I end up developing it in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tricky. It's just part of the trial and error and error and error. So you figure out how to make it work.
When I'm working on concentration, I can follow the breath, and I get my distractions. It's not, well, sometimes I have images, but lots of times it's not an image, and it's not a monologue going on, and I'm not a fantasy or anything like that. There's this just nebulous kind of thing going on that's like, well, sometimes it's like, you know, I don't want to be here, I don't want to do that. It's pretty strong that I can tell what's going on, but other times it's just something that, you know, just, you know,
If you can ignore it, you know, label it as nebulous or aversion or whatever, and ignore it and just push it aside and keep going, that's probably the best.
Okay.
If you're unable to get it to leave you alone so that you're undistracted, then you might have to explore it. And you might explore it with, all right, what's going on here? Give me some clarity around this, or, and see if something comes up. And that may give you a better sense of what it is. And if it's aversion, the antidote is metta. If it's wanting, then you got to figure out what it is you're wanting and recognize that whatever it is you're wanting, whether it's a material object or a mind state or something, less than perfect, and it's the wanting is interfering with what you're actually trying to do at this point. Does that help?
Yes, I'll try those.
Okay, good.
In doing the body scan, are you supposed to let go of the awareness of the breath completely, or it?
Let go of the breath completely as best you can. It's going to come back when you get to your nostrils, of course. It's going to come back when you're maybe doing your chest. It's going to come back when you're doing your belly, right? But as soon as you move on from those areas, then ignore it. You really want to give 100% attention to whatever sensation is right there. Okay, and yeah. It's tricky because, we've worked so hard to be with the breathing, and then I'm telling you, don't be with the breathing. Just when you get good at being with the breathing. All right. Clinging in any form doesn't work.
Can you say more about, when you say wispy thoughts, like how to understand that? Is the key just that you are not being pulled into them, or that they're, nebulous or like if it's a conversation in another room that you could pay attention to, but now you're totally not.
Right.
But it's in a sense you're aware it's there. The word wispy wouldn't come to me, but it would feel I'm distracted.
Yeah. What I find is the thoughts back there, they're wispy in the sense that they don't really draw my attention. It's like the part of me that has this internal dialogue going on all the time just won't shut up. But it's not speaking very loudly, and it's not saying anything important. And it's probably commenting on what's going on. Okay, this is good. Yeah, all right. Just stick with it. You should probably stay here a little longer. Just this sort of stuff back there. And when I say wispy, I'm trying to get, what's the difference between, okay, let's think about politics right now, or, something that's really going to grab you. It's the difference between a little wisps of smoke coming up from a fire that's practically gone out to a roaring bonfire with smoke and heat and everything just, totally taking over the system. Last two.
Mm-hmm. 2 days ago, you mentioned that we shouldn't take a deep breath at a certain point, which might take us into a different direction.
When you're trying to get to the first jhana, so while you're trying to get to access concentration, while you're in access concentration, while you're focused on the pleasant sensation, avoid taking a deep breath in any of those. Can take a deep breath when you want to move from one jhana to the next, because it will calm things down. And you, as you move 1, 2, 3, 4, you're calming things down. But prior to the first jhana, don't take a deep breath if you can avoid it.
Even when I am trying to establish access concentration, I get lost. And then...
If you get lost, then you're nowhere near the jhana. So to settle yourself back in, you can take a deep breath. I find that sometimes really helpful. I just spent 10 minutes in Hawaii. It's like, All right, now.
My comment was on the today there's a heavy cloud covering the clouds are very close to us. And when I think about the thoughts people in this year, they're like the cirrus clouds, the ones that are etching through the sky, the ones that are very far away in the back. And so I tend to look at the clouds like that. My thoughts like that. If my thoughts are heavy and intruding, planning my Hawaii vacation. But when they're whenever at a wispy stage, they're so far back here and I can't touch them.
Yeah.
That's the analogy I use.
That's very good. I'm gonna steal that one.
Probably.
Right. Okay, so we got a half an hour until lunch. It's not raining, so I'm going to say go outside and explore the elements. There's lots of them out there, and you'll take your elements out there as well, and just notice the solid, liquids, and gases, energy associated with the material world. And I will ring the bell at 11:55, so you'll know when to go up and get your lunch. I'm only going to ring it in this area, though, so if you go off someplace, you're going to have to find your own way back.